Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What's up, guys? It's Candace Dillard Bassett, former Real Housewife of Potomac.
And I'm Michael Arsenault, author of the New York Times bestseller, I Can't Date Jesus. And this is Undomesticated, the podcast where we aren't just saying the quiet parts out loud.
We're putting it all on the kitchen table and inviting you to the function. If you're ready for some bold takes and a little bit of chaos, welcome to Undomesticated. Follow and listen to Undomesticated, available wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
11 o'clock hour here on Cody and Gold. Coming up in 20 minutes, we will get to the trash of the day. Of course, you guys can interact with us on the Jay Southland Toast Service text line, 913-586-7965. Cody can see the text today. So today's your day to just talk all kinds of smack on me. I cannot see the text line. Some technical difficulties, like literally have no way to pull it up on my end, which is unfortunate. I shouldn't feel so. I feel like I'm missing out. It's game day. I don't feel connected with everybody.
You could get on maybe the Twitch or YouTube chats.
I could.
You could talk to somebody.
I want to interact with people. What are they saying?
Over
are they
on saying, what, hey, the text line or Twitch?
I
want to
know.
Where?
Are they saying, hey, what are they? I just want to know what people are saying today. I have no vibe of the city today.
Let's see. It says, from the 913, Kansas football feels the exact same way as the Royals right now.
Okay.
A different person said, so wait, the Kansas isn't the Jets anymore, but they're the Cardinals, which is an interesting comp because I said that they were just kind of stuck back there. Let's see. Said K-State fans are just as bad. They're in denial. They want to fire their head coach too, even after the win. So a little bit of everything.
Okay.
We'll talk some Chiefs here in just a minute. I'll let you know what people are saying.
I want to talk about the offensive line here in about 8 minutes or so. Two individuals will not be on the O-line tonight. And so what does that mean going up against the Commanders? We'll do that. And as I said, the trash of the day in 20 minutes. But it seems like this is the year of the buyout in college football. The latest coach,
it sure is,
that has been axed, of course, is Brian Kelly at LSU. They got embarrassed at home by a very good, very, very good Texas A&M team. But still, again, when you're a program like that and you also are only winning about 70% of your games and you haven't taken LSU to where you're supposed to be in that program's mind, competing for national titles, you're going to have consequences, and especially in today's day and age. And so you had another coach fired, Brian Kelly, $53 million buyout. We know about James Franklin, 49.7, Billy Napier, 21.2, Mike Gundy, 15 million, Sam Pittman at Arkansas, 9.8. I can keep going, right? All the way down to even Jay Norvell at Colorado State, who's owed 1.5 million. Now, a lot of these contracts do have offset language. So if you're Brian Kelly and you get hired in a couple months, what you make, there will be offset there. You know, if you're making $5 million a year and LSU owes you $9 million, then they only owe you, you know, the $4 million. You know, so these $169 million in buyouts, that won't be ultimately whatever gets paid out. But it just tells you the situation we're in. It's why it's going to set up a crazy college football carousel. Brian Kelly left Notre Dame because he thought he could win a national championship there, couldn't win one at Notre Dame. And he struggled from the very beginning to kind of fit that program. Everybody, when he got hired, was like, does this seem like a great fit? Brian Kelly going down to LSU. I'm not saying this is why he didn't have success, but it was a bad sign when this happened. We joked about this at the time a couple years ago when he was at halftime of a LSU basketball game and he was speaking to the crowd and he was being fake, very fake and phony already talking to the crowd.
It's a great night to be a Tiger.
All of a sudden, you developed a Southern accent.
I'm here with my family.
My family.
I'm here with my family.
First.
You're
got to clear my throat.
You're all right?
Come on, Brian.
Anyway, come on, man. I was very emotionally choked up.
It sounds Kelly like you've really been out of shape for this loss.
Brian Kelly really, you know, he meant a lot to me.
Yeah.
First, my family is one of my favorite weird incidences out of a coach ever. And it makes me dream of a world
family
in which he takes a job in a different, like he takes a job in California. He's like, yeah, Braj, let's go get some
that
wins.
That would actually be pretty
and
epic
he just
if
makes
he did
up
that.
Some other
he takes
stupid
a UCLA
accent.
Job, yeah.
Yeah. And he just makes up some other accent that has nothing to do with the upstate New York upbringing that he was a part of. And so I kind of feel like you knew it was doomed. Really, from the beginning there? I mean, look at the bowls he's playing in. He won the Citrus and Relia Quest and Texas Bowl. That's not good enough for LSU.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, I'm not surprised this. That, like, I'll stay away from the point that I've already made, which is I don't ever want to hear anybody say, there's not enough money to pay athletes. Nonsense. They're paying out $160 million in buyouts this year. What's most interesting about it is, in the world of NIL, what I think has happened is the leash is shorter. They're treating it more like NBA coaches or NFL coaches, which is, hey, man, you got 2 or 3 years to get this thing kind of rolling. And if you're not up to the expectation, we'll pay any amount of money to make you go away. We're not worried about the price tag at the end of the rainbow to pay. And this is going to be an absolutely insane coaching cycle.
Yeah, LSU, Penn State, and Florida are all open.
Missouri is going to have to work to keep Drinkwitz employed at the University of Missouri. And some of these other programs, if you got a coach that you like, good luck, because it is going to be hard to keep them at your university during this cycle, because LSU might be the best of many very good to great jobs in the college landscape.
Yeah, it's better than it's Florida. It's definitely better than Florida. So, you know, if you thought, oh, there's no way X coach would leave to go to Florida, that LSU is a job that a lot of coaches don't hesitate to take. They get offered and you go. And we all know the trickle down effect. And this is why it'll be crazy once we get to late December into January. Is you know, let's say Matt Rhule does leave Nebraska. Well, then Nebraska, of course, opens up, and so who jumps ship? So this is going to just have a massive trickle down effect. I know we were all three of us were texting last night, just like our, you know, perspective on it and predicting kind of who could go where. I mean, if you're Brian Kelly, and let's say Matt Rhule did take the Penn State job, and I'm not saying he's going to go there for sure, but let's just say Matt Rhule went to Penn State. Nebraska, it would be a home run hire to get Brian Kelly all of a sudden. Where do you guys think Brian Kelly ends up? Because we all agree he's coaching next year somewhere, right? He's not sitting out a year.
Could he just end up in Nebraska?
Again, Matt Rhule would have to leave, and probably the only place he's leaving for is Penn State. So it's like, is Penn State hiring him or not? Otherwise, Matt Rhule's not leaving for any of these other gigs.
If I were any of the power programs, I would borderline instant hire Brian Kelly. I think he might not have just been a fit at LSU. It worked at Notre Dame. He was never it's not like it fell apart at LSU. He wasn't a college football playoff team. He was on the fringe and just outside of that. Like, let's say Matt Rhule left. I would instantly hire him at Nebraska if he would take the job. I would hire him at Penn State, although that doesn't feel like why is that any different than like the area he was recruiting at Notre Dame? If I were any of these programs, other than maybe Florida, where it doesn't feel like a fit, I would instantly hire Brian Kelly. Like, if Missouri lost Drinkwitz, I'd beg Brian Kelly to come coach the Tigers. Am I wrong for thinking that he should be one of the best coaching candidates available?
No, I think you're there. I think he's in the same grouping as James Franklin, where James Franklin got fired by Penn State, but I think he'll be not necessarily in the first line of coaches who you call, but I feel like he'll be in the mix where I think both he and Brian Kelly will be coaching. It's just, you know, the order of interest. It's not going to hit Brian Kelly until...
You don't think he's the number one target for anybody?
I don't think Penn State is looking at...
Maybe not, but it's just like, you don't think, like, if we were just to...
I don't think Florida right now is looking at calling Brian Kelly right now over Lane Kiffin. I think Florida, for instance, it'll be Lane Kiffin, it'll be Eli Drinkwitz, then maybe you get to James Franklin, Brian Kelly out of the bunch, I think is how it kind of falls down, unless you want to look at a group of five coach, which again also opens up the possibility for Alex Golish, John Summerall, and Ryan Silverfield.
I'm not going anywhere.
Well, and like, I mean, people think, what else they think is going to open? Florida State,
based on all the rumblings, Florida State's going to be open at the end of the season. They're letting it finish out.
Huge job. Like, it's just so many big jobs available this season. It's going to be a wild circle.
It's going to be a bigger trickle-down effect than when Saban left, because Saban was one position for Alabama, and that trickled down to everything, where this is three or four or five of those types of jobs where, yeah, it's definitely going to be filled throughout all college football.
Look, here's the thing. In this whole deal, the agents are the biggest winner of this entire deal because they're still getting money on the buyouts, and you're also going to end up having leverage use. So if Eli Drinkwitz stays at Mizzou, he's obviously going to get a massive raise this off. He has to.
Yep.
Otherwise, they will lose him. So he's either way, it's a win-win for Eli and his agent, and I don't know who his agent is. Same thing. We were talking about Vanderbilt and what they are clearly doing and looking like they're headed towards the college football playoff.
Yeah, Clark Lee.
If you compare what Clark Lee has done there compared to like Cignetti at Indiana, Indiana feels way more sustainable. Vandy feels like, all right, you got Diego Pavia. You've done a, you got it. It's kind
of taking advantage of this moment.
Perfect storm. Academic requirements are also very tough at Vandy. It's a great school, as we know. I don't think if you're him, I think you need to leave sooner rather than later. The chance of you sustaining this exact level for another 5 years is way tougher than what Cignetti's doing at Indiana, in my opinion.
Text line pointed it out, and I'm sure we all thought it. I know they'll send a text, make a call. Is there any chance they could convince Saban to take the job?
The only school out of all of them LSU. Would be LSU. The
no,
only
that's
one.
The job I'm talking about.
The only one would be
I
LSU.
I know they'll text and be like, yo, Nick, yep.
Yeah,
they'll fire off the text.
The only one, yes.
They'll see.
I don't think
they'll
he's coming back. Because of the NIL era and why he left. But yeah, you at least check in. And then you had the weird rumor over the weekend with Steve Sarkisian, who he was very upset in postgame. His agent had to put out a statement because there was a Diana Rossini report that she was hearing that his people were putting out feelers, letting NFL people know he was looking out. I'm not saying that he's lying, but I also know, like, we've seen plenty of times that just because you come out with a forceful statement after a game saying you're upset it got out, that doesn't mean it was a lie either. So I don't know what to believe if Sark would want to go to the NFL, but the only way this gets more chaotic is if Texas opened up in the next 2 months as well. Seemingly every big job you can think of would be open at that point.
It'd be like half the SEC in Big Ten at that point.
It is interesting, though, because I think that, you know, the dynamic when we talk about, like, these jobs and whether they're better or not, it's different with Coach Drinkwitz because I know that he's had sustained success, but he's never made it to the playoff where I think that's enough for you to be convinced to leave Missouri. Like, Missouri is like, hey, you know what, we'll slap down $10 million on the table for you. You're going to be one of the highest paid coaches in college football. If he knows he can make $500,000 less to go coach at a place that he can make the playoff at or feels like he can, like if Texas fires Sark and let's say they run through the options and all of a sudden Drinkwitz is one of the main names at the plate and they offer him the job for $500,000 less, I think he would be a little silly for not taking I want to make this extra $500,000, so I'm going to not take the Texas job. It feels like that's...
Yeah, I mean, there's some jobs where...
I think where with Missouri, it's... They haven't made the playoff yet, where I think that his name coming up, if he's offered the job at LSU, he's leaving Missouri.
Absolutely.
Point blank and period. It doesn't matter much LSU's offered.
This isn't meant to be a knock on Missouri. He should.
LSU, I mean, obviously, if Texas opened up, these are jobs you don't hesitate. You take. Florida, we can debate back and forth a little bit about what type of job is. I still tend to believe, if I look at the overall history of the program, it's not close. I mean, one program
has gotten multiple
national titles over the last 30 years, et cetera. Like, so I still lean there. That one, there's at least a little bit of debate. But the LSUs, the Texases, there's no question there. All right, about 7 minutes, we'll get to the trash of the day. Meanwhile, the news over the weekend with the Chiefs practicing on Saturday because, of course, the Monday night game, we find out that the back spasm's bad enough to continue to hold out Trey Smith. He's listed officially as doubtful. Nobody expects him to play. He's not playing tonight. So Caliendo is going to start at right guard. Of course, left tackle, once again, will be Jalen Moore. No surprise. Josh Simmons is still not with the team, although there was an update on that we'll get to during the Chiefs Red half hour. So you have two backup linemen. I know Jalen Moore feels like a starter, and they signed him in the offseason as if he could be a starter, and he's played very well. But you have two backup offensive linemen going tonight. This is where this cannot be the game where Juwan Taylor has the setback. He has been awesome at right tackle in terms of not having the penalties the last 3 or 4 weeks. This cannot be a game where, all right, Caliendo to your left, if you're Juwan Taylor, obviously he's not the same level of Trey Smith. Nope. I can't have Juwan Taylor have the night where he decides to have 3 or 4 penalties, and suddenly the right side of the O-line is a massive liability.
It's far more important a couple weeks from now when they take on Denver. Fortunately for them, they got a bye in between there, too, and with the report that Simmons could be back in a couple of weeks, post-bye would certainly seem like a good opportunity to have an offensive lineman because they're having more sacks than anyone in the league. In particular, it seems to matter in this game because Washington is not a dynamic defensive line. Like, so I'm worried about it, Gold, but I'm not panicked about it. If this were the same lineup and it was Caliendo and Jalen Moore and they were getting ready to take on Denver or one of these other better defensive line teams, hell, even Buffalo's fifth best in the NFL, in sacks per game at this stage of the season. So it's not like they just lost Ed Oliver before the game next week. I'd be more worried about it. For this week, and I guess we'll talk, we've got guests from Washington coming in at noon, but for this week, I feel like they can actually get by with it. Am I a little worried? Sure. Partially, that's probably scare tactic from last year. I know there's only so much water an offensive line can take on, and it happens quick. And you think it's fine, and then they can have a game where, like you say, Juwan Taylor commits a couple of penalties, Mike Caliendo's not as sharp, and Jalen Moore backslides even a tiny bit. And that's a tough day.
Yeah.
It's not hard to imagine. I'm not like putting together a million pieces and 1,000 things going wrong to have a bad day at the office for the offensive line. The only difference now is that if they have a bad day on the offensive line, they can still get rid of the ball quick. They can still get it in the hands of actual weapons capable of doing stuff. Doesn't that soften the blow for you too? Knowing that they actually have weapons that could do damage if they had to get rid of the ball quickly? Because it does for me.
It does. I still think, it's more about the right side and, to me, Juwan Taylor tonight. Like, can he continue to play at the level he has the last couple weeks? Because if he has an off night, then you're really weak on the right side. And that's how you have a game in which you really have no business losing on paper heading in.
Yeah.
How does it become got to score final possession type of game? It's if your entire right side of the offensive line is just not with it on a given night. And Taylor is a huge part of that. Caliendo, I'm not worried about him unless Juwan Taylor also is having a rough night. Then it compounds itself and it's a big problem. That's where I would be overall. Now, and then Trey Smith, look, it's precautionary. Back spasms for a big offensive lineman. Anytime you hear about a back injury of some sort, you always step back a little bit and say, all right, this is a long haul of a season. I'm not so sure it's an automatic like he's available next week. Whatever you need to, this is about the long view here. So let's see where things are at. Hopefully it's just precautionary. But Trey Smith, I don't like hearing about the back spasms. Remember, he had that back injury against the Raiders, came back in for a drive. Then the game got out of hand. They ruled him out. We thought, okay. And then I think Fesco had the report earlier in the week, last week on Wednesday, that things were trending in a good direction. So I'm hoping it's more precautionary, not that the back spasms are flaring up more and more, because that's something that you don't know if that goes away or that lingers all year.
The only part, I guess, that scares me about it is typically, and you and I have agreed to this, typically I think the Chiefs do slow walk injuries and are careful with it. But this year, they don't really have that same luxury, knowing the same thing we brought up earlier, which is like they got to win tonight. And so they can't be goofing around before they take on Denver, before they take on Buffalo and the Colts. Their next three games after this one stand out. It is against three teams ahead of them in the standings and with a combined, five losses between the three opponents? Two for Denver, two for Buffalo, and one for Indianapolis at the moment. So, like, not murderer's row, but no one's going to have a tougher three-game stretch than what the Chiefs face after this game tonight. And I don't want to make it all about this game, because obviously we're going to talk about what happens against Washington tonight. But that's where the offensive line is absolutely, like, must-watch the entire time. Not for the future of the team, just let me just see the first quarter. Does he have time? Is he settled in? Is he comfortable? And just as long as that's the case, I don't think this is a hard win. If he has to, like, work for it a little bit, that's how this game gets close. And close games can go a lot of different ways. And one mistake, like, oh, I don't know, a pick six at the 1 yard line can change things, right? Can cost you a game like it did against the Jags. And with the very little movement gold you and I think that they have in there, it's, sometimes I think it just adds a challenge to it. That's all.
All right, let's get to it.
Trash of the day.
All right, we go to New York for this one. State of New York, where a woman was arrested. Wondering, okay, what happened here? Vandalizing a car. But the details on it, it makes it a little bit more interesting. So Cody's probably going to tell us a story where he's like, oh, I did that at one point in time when I was a kid.
Vandalized a car?
This was a 21-year-old last week.
Okay.
Officers responded to a criminal complaint at a location on a certain street, doesn't really matter to us, where they found a vehicle covered in ketchup, mustard, mayo, and eggs. The car had also been scratched with a sharp object. Total damage, more than $7,000. They identified this woman named Stacy as the person responsible based on video evidence. Charged her with second-degree criminal mischief. No word on how much money she had to spend on all the ingredients on top. That's what the headline of the story said. Now, look, I'm assuming at some point, you know, people would do this, the baloney to ruin paint on car thing. We've all been there at some point when we were dumb and, you know, 12 years old or whatever.
Are you saying you did that?
I had friends in my cul-de-sac that did that. Ooh. And some friends. People in our cul-de-sac put Italian dressing on my parents' garage doors. They, like, ruined the paint on the garage door, the oil texture on that. Yeah, so this is all dumb stuff people did in, you know, junior high and as kids.
Yeah.
This one, she's 21 years old. What are you? You're 21 and you're putting ketchup, mustard, mayo, and then you had to scratch the vehicle? If you just did the ketchup, mustard, mayo, and eggs, nobody's reporting you. People move on with their day.
Why'd you put a big deep scratch in it, too?
Yeah, that's the problem.
I guess that's, at 21, I was out of the antics game, right?
But did you damage a vehicle as a kid? Or know people that were?
Well, I mean, yeah.
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 Yes. Yeah, to which part?
Both. If you want to know the truth, both. Both. Like, I told you, I was a nuisance.
Uh-huh.
I was a nuisance.
Was this after smashing the mailboxes? Or?
Same timeline. Okay. I would say my vandalism was not limited to just mailboxes and ran a wide swath. Now, I'll say, I didn't put, like, a deep scratch in someone's car.
That's messed up.
It was I wasn't, like, smashing someone's windshield in. It was the type of vandalism in my head at that time was resolvable in the sense that, like, wouldn't cost you money to resolve. In my head is what I thought would be the case.
What do you make of the ketchup, mustard, mayo, and egg combo?
It makes no sense to me.
Like, if you're new,
did you dig in your parents' fridge and just decide, sure, this works?
I mean, honestly, at this point, why not just throw a bunch of eggs at the vehicle? What are you messing with the ketchup, mustard, and mayo for? Grab the eggs and throw them and be done.
We've all egged something before. That's certainly true.
Drew's nodding his head over there. You got experience with this?
I guess here's the.
I mean, in high school, like, you joke around because people drive.
People egging cars.
If you're in the kids, if you're on the parking side of things where students park, you know, there's a lot of fun stuff that.
I guess
goes
here's
on.
Here's part of where I think the lesson that, like, my nuisance as a kid does not apply to today. You can't do any of this anymore. There's a Ring camera on like 50% of the houses in your neighborhood.
There's no ding-dong ditch, okay?
I'd have gotten busted.
That doesn't really work anymore with the Ring cameras.
I'd have gotten busted so much sooner than I did in today's era. I wouldn't have made it as long. They can catch you. Like, they can catch you. So be smart about it, because for two reasons, just don't make the same mistakes I made, but also...
Don't be an idiot. Yeah.
But also, they caught her on camera vandalizing the car. Like, they have things now to catch you more easily. So you can't be getting, you know, you're not getting away with it.
I really do think, like, there's no way anybody does ding-dong ditch anymore, right? As a kid, like, you walk up and they're Ring camera, like, they're going to be able to detect it very quickly.
We did all kinds of stuff, man. We put instant mashed potatoes in Waterman people's yards.
Ooh, I didn't hear about that one.
It's really
hard. I mean, we never did anything to people's houses, and I guess, I don't know what
level of... You didn't, like, TP them, or...?
No, I don't know what level of vandalism, like...
TPing for sure. I guess now people are doing more of the egg stuff, like egging people's.
I don't think I'd like to admit to the amount of vandalism I committed as a kid. I just told Drew earlier today, on Halloween when I was in like ninth grade, I'd wait for kids I knew and I'd hit them with water balloons for trick-or-treating at my house. I'd sit on the pitch of the roof, hiding behind the little gable.
So you didn't go out to trick-or-treat?
And then I would just, no. And then I would just,
Is throwing water balloons at a car considered vandalism?
Yeah, that can be...
Is it?
I don't know if vandalism, but that can be... you better hope it didn't cause them to get in a wreck, because then
you're
going
to... Were you doing it to them, like, on the highway? Like, car?
No. This is, like, what I'm saying about, like, high school level stuff, where, like, you're in the parking lot, and a bunch of your friends show up, and you have a plane, you got there early, and you're going to just
throw water... But, like, I think that's fine.
Like, that's... Is that quote-unquote considered vandalism? Because there was a lot of that in high school. You joke around in that aspect.
You're on the lowest end.
But as Cody was saying, if they're on a main street, and you're chucking, and it causes them to get an accident, you're responsible. It's a big problem.
Because have you ever those big tube TVs? They make like an explosion sound when they get destroyed. We'd like find, and look, we weren't throwing, but like we'd find really high places to go drop them off of to watch them explode. I shouldn't admit to the amount of vandalism as a kid, but there were moments.
Just wait till your kids get old enough. See what they tried doing, Cody.
I don't need to. I'm just, as far as they're concerned, I was a perfect child getting in no trouble. I don't want to encourage him into getting into trouble.
Nor should you. That is the...
I want your kids to be better than you.
Is there any point where you're going to be open and be like, you know what, when I was a kid, these are the things that I did, or are you just going to avoid bringing that side of things up forever?
They're going to have to be mature and like of a certain age, right? Like I'm not admitting to them now.
Well, yeah, yeah.
You know, I got you. 79
gonna have to be
old.
In college or later.
Yeah. I would think late high school. You
don't want to tell your high school age son and daughter. Oh yeah, by the way, when I was in high school, I was at your age. When I was doing all these things.
Like, your frontal lobe is fully developed. Then they can know.
All right, that's the trash of the day. Up next, let's talk about Rashee Rice and something that Matt Nagy had to say about how they're going to involve him in the offense over the last couple of weeks ahead and last week, I should say, and how the rest of the AFC fared kept us intrigued over the weekend. That's
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What's up, guys? It's Candace Dillard-Bassett, former Real Housewife of Potomac.
And I'm Michael Arsenault, author of the New York Times bestseller, I Can't Date Jesus. And this is Undomesticated, the podcast where we aren't just saying the quiet parts out loud.
We're putting it all on the kitchen table and inviting you to the function. If you're ready for some bold takes and a little bit of chaos, welcome to Undomesticated. Follow and listen to Undomesticated, available wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Next here on Cody and Gold.
Welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan.
Chiefs Red Half Hour brought to you by All Weather Decks, Kansas City's most respected deck builder. Check them out at allweatherdecks.net.
Coming up in about 30 minutes or so, we're going to be joined by our sister station in Washington, D.C. They're actually in town. I just saw them in the hallway. They've been in town throughout the weekend, hung out with them a little bit. It's their first time at Arrowhead, so we'll talk to them about being in KC and, of course, what they make of this matchup, get their point of view on it. So Grant and Danny from 106.7 The Fan in D.C. will join us in a little bit. Something caught your attention, though, over the weekend. It was some comments, actually, from Matt Nagy, Chiefs Offensive Coordinator, talking about Rashee Rice, who we all know this will be game number 2 for him here in the 2025 season.
He probably got lost in the shuffle because it was Friday, ahead of the weekend, and all the other stuff. But he had specifically, he was talking about Rashee Rice's workload and like, hey, you going to use him this much? Because seems like you guys targeted him a ton. He admitted to a slow ramp up for Rashee Rice in the sense that the number of snaps he got was not just because it was a blowout gold. It was because they're trying not to overuse Rashee Rice way too much too early and instead build him up towards something on the team. And so like for tonight's game, I was thinking about it a little bit. And yeah, what is the split going to look like? And I think that there's a chance that Rashee Rice is only like a 60% snap guy. But in those snaps, they're going to target him like mad. And so how they break this up is interesting tonight because the Commanders are going to have to game plan for that. And I don't think Rashee Rice, one, I just don't think he's going to get the target share he got in the number of snaps he got last time. Very few times do I think someone's going to run 14 routes, get targeted 10 times, and make 7 catches. So I just think his workload's going to be down a little bit, which means I'm expecting, and I think they need, bigger nights from Xavier Worthy, a bigger night from Travis Kelce. I think they've got to lead more of the way against the Commanders than what we saw against the Raiders. Now, the Raiders, everyone blew it up, so it's a little bit weird.
I mean, yeah, because the entire fourth quarter, they didn't pass the ball. By the time they got midway through the third quarter, the game was over. I mean, yeah. Some people would say at halftime even. But
I mean, he essentially admitted that he was on a snap count anyway.
Yeah, and he spoke in postgame, you know, and he said, you know, that, of course, he felt like he could have done more, but he acknowledged that they were limiting him, and Andy was checking in on him during the game to see how he was feeling. This is now another full week of practicing. You now have a game under your belt as well. I don't know what the stat line is going to look like for Rashee Rice, but I think it'll be at least what we saw last year from a snap percentage and everything like that. You're right about the 7 catches on the 14 routes run, which is a very, very high rate. Even if it's 42 yards, you still have 2 touchdowns. I think the offense, let's not forget, the plan last year, and we saw it last week, the plan of this offense runs through Rashee Rice. It just does. So, yeah, tonight, stat line-wise, it could be a bigger game for Hollywood Brown. Tonight, could we see some things that are trying to also, let's keep in mind, especially late in the game, if the Chiefs are fortunate to have a comfortable lead, and this is not a nail biter, and hopefully it's not, but if it is, it changes things. If it's not, I don't know what looks they will be setting up for Buffalo. I do think in the fourth quarter, if this is a 2+ possession game, they could put some things out there intentionally to give some looks that allow, force the Bills to also think a little bit differently in the week. Keep that in mind. Like, I think there is a little bit of, yeah, you're going out there, you're trying to win tonight, and you're the organization.
You hope they forget about Rashee Rice if you can.
But, the organization's looking in a different route, but I think that would be the only part where I could see them holding something back from Rice, is if they, in the same formation that we were wondering how often we would see it, Rice, Brown, Worthy on the field at the same time. We only saw it like 5 times against the Raiders, where they had the formation. It was Rice, Worthy, and Brown. Heck, even when Tyquan Thorne and Breshard Smith, 5 yep. wide. They went all. That's a lot of speed. We saw that a few times in the game. If things are comfortable tonight, I don't know how much they want to show that again. Wait until what they have coming up, Buffalo and Denver and Indy and beyond. Because if you're any opponent right now, you don't have a lot of film still, even after last week, of that combination on the field at the same time. And what are the routes look like? What's the
who's
the
running where, when?
Yeah, yeah. What are they playing after or playing off of for a future play in the game?
Look, I think we know that Rashee Rice is going to lead this team in receiving yardage and receptions the rest of the way. Seems like a safe bet across the board. I just don't think his usage is going to look like it did against the Raiders last week. I think that was a, all right, let's get you in the mix. Let's make everyone forget that we have other people to guard. And for one day, we're going to make the next few opponents only worry about Rashee Rice and be like, how do we slow that guy down? Because we talked about this and the way it opens up things for Travis Kelce and all these other guys in the offense who will get that one-on-one coverage. They still found their way to get their ball down to Tyquan Thornton deep. They will still do that at least once in this game tonight would be my guess. But, like, I am curious to see how they handle the balance. And the question I would have following up to that is, when will Rashee Rice be at full workload? Is this meant to be a, like, 50, 70, 100? So, like, 50% last week, 70, and he didn't play that much, but he didn't have to. 70% of the snaps he would normally play this week, and then he's a full go by Buffalo, full go by Denver, and after the bye week? Like, when is your... you know, your full go? Because, and I know we'll talk more about this later in the week, Nick Jacobs had pointed out what we mentioned kind of at the beginning of the show. After this game, 4 of the 7 teams who are in front of them in the AFC standings, they play in the next 8 games. So, like, they're just going to start playing everybody ahead of them in the standings.
It's all right there for them. I mean, if you believe
Indy
in how
Denver,
they're playing.
And Buffalo, like, these are all teams that actively sit ahead of them in the standings. So, like, they're going to just take them on one by one, week after week there for a while. And so there is part of me that does say, like, it'd be nice if this is another game where Rashee Rice doesn't have to get his full workload and they can take advantage of Worthy and Kelce and these other guys, because I don't want him, like, ramping up too fast. He is still coming off, and I know he hadn't played. It is still coming off an injury and coming off of not game shape. I know he got a full training camp. Everyone will tell you that if you take 6 weeks off of football, I don't care how much you work out down in Texas, it doesn't matter. That is not the same as playing an NFL football game. It's going to take a few games to feel that speed again, to feel that kind of workout. So I'm watching tonight to see how much he plays, to see what level of workload he gets, and to see, like, they're obviously not afraid to throw it to him if he's on the field. It's more about snaps than anything else.
Yeah, I'll be curious. Just the packages that they have with all those guys on the field at a given time, and we'll see. I truly think, you know, if this is a game in which it's tied at halftime versus what we saw last week, it's a different feeling about how the Chiefs are going to attack the Commanders. This is why it goes without saying, you get off to a nice start early, don't give the Commanders any bit of hope, and then that allows you maybe to ease up a little bit in the fourth quarter to where you don't have to show all that much on film for your opponent. Although last week, the fact that they had Gardner Minshew in the backfield, that's a formation they have other wrinkles off of. That's something we may not see again until the playoffs. Or we may not even see it again the rest of the year, but it's something that they have in their back pocket.
Showed a little bit
as well. As far as the Commanders tonight, I said it on Friday, and I think you agree, and that is, like, the buzz around the game, of course, is way less. Commanders team that hasn't played all that great. Their starting quarterback is out. The Chiefs are 12-point favorites. I also don't think this is a trap game or any of that, because what we just acknowledged, the Chiefs are 4-3 and
can't afford to lose games.
They've already dropped 2, and so you don't have a ton of wiggle room when you see a Denver team in your division at 6 wins already and looking really good. And so that, I'm not worried about that angle, but I will admit, like, this was a game preseason I was super excited for. I told you if I could only go to one home game all year, this was the one I wanted to to go to as a fan initially before we knew the Colts were going to be any good based off of what we saw from Jaden Daniels last year. Well, we don't get that. Instead, we get Mariota.
Well, look, they can't sleep on it. We know that. And there are still things that Washington does that can cause problems, mostly being Deebo Samuel, Terry McLaurin, and their running backs, where, like, I can see that they have weapons that surround it. They're still not a very good offensive line, in my opinion. And obviously, defensively, they just lost one of their better pass rushers, and they haven't been super strong in that category anyway. And so there are problems. I think the way I view this game is the reason why it still matters and there still should be some hype for it, Gold, is they need this game, the Chiefs. I don't want to make it seem like this is just a game Washington, who is also desperate, needs. The Chiefs need this game. Do we all see what just happened on Sunday? Colts won. Denver won. Chargers won on Thursday night. Every single team ahead of them.
Patriots won.
Patriots won. They've won five in a row. Colts have won five in a row. Everyone ahead of you. Bills won easily. Every team ahead of you in the standings won. What, now you're going to sleepwalk against Washington? They have a lot. They need this win. Any loss like this costs you any shot of the one seed, and that's a long shot, and puts a huge dent in your divisional odds. Like, losing this one tonight puts a huge dent in it. I'm not saying it's more important than the Denver game 3 weeks from now.
No, but you have to stack wins. I mean, at some point, you got to have the head-to-head wins, but I think we all recognize, given history, usually there's a certain win total you kind of got to get to have a real chance to win your division. And it already has a division leader in the Broncos with six wins. And yeah, you get them twice, but you're probably not, nobody's winning the AFC West this year, in my opinion. I don't know if you disagree, with 11 wins. To me, you got to get to 12.
Yeah, I think that's right.
To really be in the mix. I'm not saying you even have to get to 13. You might be 12 with a tiebreaker and you find a way to win it there. That's why the head-to-head stuff will be big. But I don't think anybody's winning this just getting to an 11-win mark.
I don't disagree.
You can't fall to 4-4. You need to get to 5-3 going into Buffalo. And I don't want to say you're playing with house money at that point, but you'd feel pretty good about where you're at. And man, oh man, if you could find a way to get to 6-3, beat the Bills going to the bye, then you're feeling amazing. That's the dream scenario. But it has to start tonight against the Commanders team that, frankly, you have no business losing to. Upsets happen, though, in the NFL. We just saw yesterday, even if we don't think they're all that good, Cincinnati just lost to a winless Jets team. We just saw a couple weeks ago a Titans team who looked like garbage come all the way back and win. We just saw the Dolphins out of nowhere.
I watched the Falcons beat the Bills and then just get their ass kicked by Miami.
Yeah, we just saw what Miami was able to do. You know, we saw the Niners, who have been playing great football, even Mac Jones, they just lost a game.
And they got run out of the building by the Texans, who looked lost.
So anybody can beat anybody. Anybody can beat anybody. There's no guarantee tonight. But this is a game where you are clearly the better team. They have their backup quarterback. You, based on what you've shown offensively and your defense is coming off a shutout, you have no business allowing the Commanders to feel like they have a real chance come fourth quarter. I hope this is a game in which the Chiefs have a lead at halftime and are not, you know, suddenly we're sitting there and it's a 10-3 game and the Commanders are somehow up 10-3 because the Chiefs have multiple mistakes and we're back to the penalties and all that. That would be a huge regression back to where they were in the Jags game if that was the case.
I will say, the Jags game is a tough one because obviously they still let that one get away. And it'll be a longer conversation, Gold, if it happens again. They're not just beating their opponents. They're winning fairly easily. I go back to the Giants game, a game in which was one of the most hideous halves of football I've ever watched. But in the second half, controlled it easily, won by 13 points, Gold. Won by 17 against Baltimore. That was with Lamar Jackson. Won by 13 against Detroit. That's one of the best teams in the NFC. Won by 31 against the Raiders. They have, in our standards, we think anything over 10, 13, 14, two touchdowns, that's a blowout in the NFL. You beat a team pretty handily, you win by two full touchdowns. They've done that four of the last five games. That's why Chiefs fans, I think, are really confident going into this game, is this is the best I've seen the Chiefs look playing football for a stretch, for a couple of games in a row, in years. This is a better two-game stretch than they've had at any point in the last couple of years. And look, some of that is because it's a very small sample size. And if you can erase that damn Jags game from my memory, I would say it's the best four. If they won that game, I'd be like, this is one of the best four game stretches they've had in years. But yeah, you're right. They really can't take Washington not seriously, even if it is Marcus Mariota, who's stepping back at quarterback form, who I looked up earlier.
Okay.
Has only thrown for over 200 yards like three times in the last 15 starts he's made. He averages like 160 yards passing per game. So if he lights you up in the secondary, you've really screwed something up.
I was looking because it's Monday Night Football, I guess, and it's a weeknight, and obviously the weather, it's chillier and things like that. You can, you know, if you're looking for a night game to get into Arrowhead, this is a
good price.
It's not a bad time to get in. Now, these are just to get in. So the worst seats, quote unquote, in the house right now.
The Jordan Love Memorial seats.
Yeah, basically the almost identical seats to that. Yeah. With fees, you can get in the building. It's row 31, section 342, way up in the corner. $74 a ticket with fees. That's about, I mean, for the Kansas City Chiefs, it's a combination of you're playing a backup quarterback. It's Monday night. The weather's not the best, although I would argue it's great football weather tonight. I think it's like it's because it's not supposed to be rainy.
Yeah, you
or
can
anything.
Wear a hoodie, but it's not have great. To wear a full coat.
Not have to, wear gloves. You know,
no.
you have to wear a nice. Yeah, you got to have some layers, but nothing crazy. $74 to get in the building tonight on a couple of the apps I'm looking here. Yeah.
I'm actually relatively surprised.
Let's see,
cheap?
To get downstairs, what do you think the cheapest is to get downstairs?
Based on the price you said, I'm going to guess $190. $190 official.
So
guess.
Looks like, at least on the side I'm at, go ahead, Drew's guess. Let's go for it.
What's your guess?
$175.
It looks like for $144.
Ooh.
Section 104, row 29, for $144 a ticket with fees.
It's pretty cheap.
On the secondary market.
That's, I mean, for a Chiefs game, I'll just say, look,
that's a great deal that's a great deal for a Chiefs game.
Money and what things cost. It is a great deal for a Monday Night Football game at Arrowhead. Prime time at Arrowhead, short notice.
To watch Patrick Mahomes?
It's not like Miami, the weather against Miami in the playoff game. I mean, you know, it's like, it's going to be 50 or whatever.
They're also not playing, you know, previously unbeaten, or winless, I'm sorry. They're not playing the Jets. You know, Commanders, I mean, we're still talking about a Commanders team with an NFC title game a year ago. Now, it stinks that Jaden Daniels is not playing, but...
No, it does, but also, like, that's just part of the deal. That's one thing. Another, we always say, like, the keys to victory or anything else, right, that we're keeping an eye out on. The pass rush is still the thing I can't figure out for Kansas City. And I was trying to decide, like, how do they fix it? What's the solution, Gold? And looking at, like, trade things over the weekend and all this other stuff. You know what the simple solution is to fix their defensive line was? Chris Jones just be better? Like, I know, and I'm not saying he's been a bad player either. That's what's funny. He has not been a bad player. But the simple solution to solving their defensive line issues is just, Chris Jones should just try being better. You know what? Or just be better.
Well.
And that would make a big difference. And I will say Washington's offensive line, and we can ask our guests, it's not been like one of the best offensive lines in the game or anything. So, yeah. I mean, it feels like there's an advantage to be had there.
Look, we've acknowledged with the money that you're making, if you're Chris Jones, the sack numbers have to be there as well. But I still think we have to recognize opposite Karlaftis, unless Aminihu continues to emerge a little bit, you're able to really focus and double team Chris Jones on a regular basis. Next Gen Stats put this out late last week. Chris Jones has the fastest time to pressure in the NFL when he's blocked one-on-one. So, like, this idea, like, is he washed? Is he not getting it done? No, when he's one-on-one, he's winning and getting quicker to the quarterback.
But nobody ever leaves him one-on-one.
But he's not, and why is that?
Line.
Yeah, because of the other issues that they have. But a minimum and 100 pass rush snaps is the minimum, according to next-gen stats. He's the fastest time to pressure, 2.3 seconds in the NFL when he's blocked one-on-one this season. So, he still has it. He still has it. He's probably just as frustrated as you are if you're saying, where's the damn sack numbers, though? But
yeah,
that's why.
Because those do still matter.
Yep.
Somebody, yeah, they're pointing out. I just don't think Karlaftis has not been the issue. He's been a fine player. Maybe not
based. He's been the target for a lot of people for whatever reason.
I still don't understand why. Do you? It's not like he's not putting up
because he got a contract in the offseason. You know how this goes. You know what I mean? He's got 3.5 heading into their 8th game of the year.
So yeah. he's tailed off the last couple of weeks. He got off to a really good start.
He had, yeah, so he has no sacks in the last two games. He had 3 sacks in the first 4, and then the last 3 weeks, he's got a half a sack.
If it's not Chris Jones, if he's attracting all this attention, then who is going to step up? I think that's where a lot of it falls
him
on.
At this point,
it falls on George. Charles Aminihu has been better the last couple of weeks.
He has.
Yeah.
Can you be good enough to get Chris Jones more than just maybe one chance at the quarterback throughout a game because he's getting done? Like, if you can... That's where having that extra guy, whoever it is, if George can get to the quarterback a couple of times, all of a sudden it opens up.
I understand.
Chris Jones.
I understand the like frustration over like long-term contract stuff, but this is also like the Chiefs paid Karlaftis. They were hoping, I'm sure, that there was some upper end, but they paid Karlaftis as the type of player exactly like he's being. He's on pace for 8.5 sacks. He had 8 the year before that and 10.5 the year before that. Those are pretty similar numbers. He is, however, on pace to have way more tackles for loss, way more tackles, way more pressures, and a similar number of quarterback hits than he had the year before. So, like, they're getting out of Karlaftis what he has already been doing for them pretty consistently. So I'd say if your issue is why pay him the amount of money for the continued amount of pay, fine. But if we're saying we're not getting normal George Karlaftis, that's where my argument
is. Yeah, I mean, I need him closer to 10.
He is performing closer to 10.
I need him closer to 10 sacks with the deal that he signed. Now, we acknowledge this when he signed.
That's a one-sack difference.
Four-year. But one sack is, it's not like it's, you know, we're talking about being 100 yards short. One sack is, that's a big, when we're not talking about guys getting 50 sacks, when you're one sack off.
When you only get 10, one's a big difference.
But no, Karlaftis, 4 years, $93 million, $62 million guaranteed. That's a deal that we've acknowledged. In 2 years, it's going to actually look really, really good financially for them because of where the market will continue to trend. That this is, at the time, people are like, how are they giving them all this money guaranteed, et cetera? It is a deal. Even if you tell me over the next 2 years he averages 9 sacks, if you will look at the comps of who's making what, the Chiefs will end up looking very good on this deal as long as he stays healthy. But the issue is more that they don't have somebody opposite him and somebody to take attention away from him or Charles Omenihu. Now, if you want to say like George Karlaftis not winning enough one-on-one, well, he's not a top five pass rusher and he's also not paid like a top five pass rusher.
I think they miss Turk Wharton as well a lot more than what they think.
Interior. They miss Pennell and Turk and some of the interior guys.
The obvious one is, well, you know, they're not getting the effectiveness out of the pass rush for Mike Pennell. And as much as we've talked about him, Turk Wharton, what did he have? Like 8.5 sacks last year?
Like 6.5.
I think that he's, from just the ability to rush the passer alongside Chris Jones, he also is a guy that they're less than now who takes away attention. Like Omar Norman-Lott was starting to come on a little bit, but it feels like defenses are okay letting George Karlaftis beat them and know that he might get you once or twice, but George Karlaftis is not going to beat us, and teams go into that comfortably knowing if we just double Chris Jones the entire game, from a protection standpoint, at least, we'll be okay.
How many Chiefs players would we have to add up to get Myles Garrett's sack numbers from just yesterday?
5 yesterday. It's crazy.
And a beatdown loss.
Got destroyed.
Are you including Drew Tranquil?
Yeah.
Because he was the one who had two. Yeah. He was second in sacks, yeah. I think, as it was last week.
Myles Garrett's unbelievable. But also, like, when he was upset in the post game, it's like, You had, again, he chose, which is fine. He chose money versus actually following through with this trade request. And that's fine. He got paid in a big way, but he has to have known what you were signing up for a little bit here.
Yeah, I mean, truthfully, it is like if you won the lottery for $100 million gold, they gave it to you all in cold, hard cash, gold bars, and then you got deserted on an island and just could do nothing with it. It was meaningless cash. He is a meaningless player in the NFL somehow. Despite the fact he's one of the most dominant players in the NFL because he's on a team that's going nowhere.
All right, up next, we'll get to what's trending, and then we'll key in on the opponent a little bit. We'll be joined by Grant and Danny from our sister station, 106.7 The Fan in D.C. They've been in Kansas City throughout the weekend, so we'll ask them a little bit about KC, what they're expecting tonight, and what the Chiefs should be worried about on the Commanders' side. That's coming up right here on Cody and Gold.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What's up, guys? It's Candace Dillard-Bassett, former Real Housewife of Potomac.
And I'm Michael Arsenault, author of the New York Times bestseller, I Can't Date Jesus. And this is Undomesticated, the podcast where we aren't just saying the quiet parts out loud.
We're putting it all on the kitchen table and inviting you to the function. If you're ready for some bold takes and a little bit of chaos, welcome to Undomesticated. Follow and listen to Undomesticated, available wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.